Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate the opportunity to come and spend some time and share some ideas with this group, this great group at BIF, almost a full room here. As I said, Dar asked me to do a little bit about promotional bit about BIF, and I don't know why in the world he asked me, because I don't think that's going to help anybody. But anyway, one of the things he asked me is what do you think about BIF? And I think it's fair to say that there is no better place on the face of this earth if your goal is to share ideas about the improvement of beef cattle. This is where the best researchers, the best producers, the best educators, it's where they all gather up. And there can be no better place than BIF to share ideas. And like I said in that promotional bit, I said, BIF has been my favorite event to attend. Of the events I attend every year, it's my favorite by a mile. Now, when I was really young, my birthday was a close second, but I don't even celebrate that anymore. So really, it's only BIF. So, and also I've heard it said, and I wouldn't argue with this, that we actually get more out of the interaction, we get more ideas, more out of the interaction than we have in the halls and the bars than we have in our presentations. So that begs the obvious question. What are you guys doing here? No, seriously. Larry and I have been commissioned we have run into an issue with our multi-breed evaluation. We had a meeting, what was it, a couple weeks ago, and Mark has asked us to lay out the issue and then lay out some ideas about the path forward. We initially billed this as a panel discussion. We didn't round up a panel, but actually you all are our panel. We want interaction. And I'm actually just the setup guy for Larry. Larry actually went through the work of putting together slides. I wish I could say I even put together one, but I didn't even put together that slide. Larry's put together all the slides. But I'm going to try to lay the table, or set the table, and Larry is going to give you more details, more specificity about the issue that we're dealing with, and then lay out some potential pathway to solve that the issue we're dealing with. And as I said, we really want input. So to start with, we're dealing with an issue with multi-breed genetic evaluation. And multi-breed genetic evaluation, many of you know, goes back to 1997. ASA, working with Drs. Quass and Pollock, or Dick and John as we typically refer to them, 1997 was the first introduction, or was when the first multi-breed genetic evaluation was introduced. Okay? There's a couple things about multi-breed that makes it different from single breed evaluation. One of those factors is we have to come up with an estimate of heterosis, right? If we just have straight bred cattle, if we're doing a straight bred analysis, it's not an issue. If we're doing a crossbred analysis, we're doing a multi-breed analysis with crossbreds, we need an estimate of heterosis. We have to estimate the effects of heterosis on all the traits we deal with. Okay. The other thing, and the reason we need that, is because we want to remove the effects of heterosis. We're after the additive effects. EPDs measure the additive effects. Heterosis is a non-additive component of an animal's genotype, and we have to remove that. So we have to come up with some estimates of heterosis. Secondly, we need to come up with estimates of breed differences, and for obvious reasons. We need to come up with estimates of breed differences. Now, there's a couple different ways we can do that. We can come up with those estimates with the data that we're analyzing. We can use the data to come up with estimates of heterosis and estimates of breed differences. Or we can use external information. We can use external data. We can use studies. We can go to literature to get those values. And if we have a methodology and a software, we can use some version in between. If we feel fairly confident that our data will get us good estimates, probably put a lot of weight on data. Conversely, if we don't feel confident in the data, we're more likely to put more weighting on the external information. Well, all the way back in 1997, when it was first introduced, Dick and John had determined that our data, field data, as we would call it, was not sufficiently structured to get good estimates of heterosis. Okay? Some of you might be thinking, how in the world can that be? You had millions of animals and you had a lot of crossbreds in there. Don't numbers matter? Sure, numbers matter. In the world of statistics, numbers are very important. And having more numbers generally is a good thing, right, Gordon? Having more numbers is a good thing. However, there's this thing we call confounding. Okay? What would be your definition of confounding? Actually, the easiest way to remember that, I was thinking when I heard the word confounding, I think of confusing. Really, they're almost interchangeable. Confounding and confusing. And what happens is we're trying to measure effects, and there are things in the data that cause confusion, confounding. And I'll give an example. Let's say we're after our goal is to determine the difference between two breeds. Okay? So, you know, any of us could design an experiment, and if we had unlimited resources, we'd say, heck, we'll take a very representative large sample of sires from each breed, right? Let's say we're after weaning weight, difference in weaning weight between these two breeds. So we take a large representative sample and do it random from each breed. And then we find a large population of cows, right? And we randomly mate those cows to those bulls. And those cows ideally are a pretty uniform set of cows, but we still randomly mate, and we do it in large numbers because money's no object. We have all the resources we want. So we do it in large numbers. And if we do that, the difference we find in weaning weight is going to be a pretty good estimate, isn't it, of the differences between those two breeds in weaning weight. Wouldn't most people agree? Get a pretty dang good estimate. Got a good sample of sires, get a lot of calves per sire, got a lot of cows mated, they're pretty uniform, you've done it all randomly. Okay, now let me throw this out. Let's say we're using Hereford and Angus. And let's say it turns out that the cowboys thought, Angus bulls are a little easier calving, so we'll tend to breed those to more of the heifers. Okay? So that causes a problem right away, doesn't it? If you're trying to compare weaning weights and the Angus got bred to more heifers, that's really not fair to Angus if you're going to compare the weaning weights between Angus and Hereford, is it? So we say, well, you know, we can deal with that. We can adjust for that. And we do. And we can generally do a pretty good job of that. But then let me throw this out. Then we realize that uniform set of cows, they were all straight Angus. They're all straight Angus. So that's a bit of a problem, isn't it? That's not fair to the Herefords. That's not fair to the Angus because there's no heterosis. Got that wrong there. So you don't have heterosis in that situation with Angus on Angus, so that's not fair to Angus. So what do? Well, we address it. In general, we can adjust for that kind of thing, and we move on. Well, let's say that the cowboys decided to breed, they knew the cows pretty well, and they decided to breed the high-milking cows to the Hereford bulls. Well, that's going to inflate the weaning weight of the Herefords, right? Okay, so all these things, what I'm leading to, I'm going from the perfect scenario, the ideal scenario to get at breed differences, and I'm taking you through steps that happen in the real world, right? All those things I just came up with, all those different variations, all those things have potential for confounding. They have potential to confuse what we're actually getting at. Okay? So, we have to, at some point in time, and that's the real world. That's how things work in the real world. We have all of those things. We have certainly have non-random mating. We have some breeds that are more likely to be bred to younger cows and older cows, and there's virtually no end to the different combinations. Now, in general, through statistical methodology, numbers, and so forth, we can tease out some of those differences. But at some point, and like I said, in the early years, all the way back to 1997, Dick Quast and John Pollock had concluded that our data wasn't sufficient. It wasn't structured in a way where we could actually get at good estimates of heterosis. So for virtually all the time we've been doing multi-breed evaluation, we've used external information, not the data, to estimate heterosis effects. Okay? Now, over that time, the vast majority of that time, we've had primarily two breeds in our database. We've had Hereford in very early years, but over the last 20 years, we've had Angus and Simmental. Okay? And in general, we felt, because we had fair numbers, we had a lot of head-to-head competition, we were able to get a pretty good estimate of the differences between those breeds. But even then, we used meat animal research data to kind of keep things in between the white lines. Now, over the last number of years, we have taken on several new populations of breeds and breed combinations into our database. We now do genetic evaluation. In one evaluation, we now have 12 breeds, both the U.S. and Canada. They're all that data are put together in one evaluation. And as we've been doing that, it has become more and more evident to us that confusion I talk about, it is to the point where we do not feel comfortable with getting the estimates of breed differences from our data. We have made the conclusion that we are going to need to get that information external to our data. So with that, I will pass the mic over to Larry, and he has slides, actually, and he will give you more details about this. And like I say, we want feedback from you all, so.
Right, and Wade really laid out this problem very well, and what we've been trying to think in a lot of ways to do overall over the past few years. We've had a real attempt, I think, a real legitimate attempt for the multi-breed evaluation that's been produced to make sure that we try to get a lot of these breeds on the same base so that we can start to compare these breeds using their EPD directly and not have to go through a table or something like that. And if you think about that being an ultimate goal, we think that trying to get this data into a system like that's an important step. And one thing, if we just think about this, we just talked about adaptation or uptake of a lot of this technology by producers that may not be using EPDs comfortably anyway. If we end up with sources of data where we expect things on the same base coming from more than one place, that's probably not good for that level of confusion. So as we keep going in here, we need to make sure that these systems agree as much as possible, and we're trying to do the best job of getting the information to be relevant to the ultimate customers of all of these things. really this initial part, because we want more discussion, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these intro slides because Wade laid it out really, really well. We want to merge multiple breed databases together. Structures are different, and we need a lot of cooperation to get multi-breed done, as we know. You might say that multi-breed evaluation helped drive some shops out and into Wade's shop in order for it to actually get done, because it's been a difficult road with things like IDs and trying to get things all merged together. And I respect the time that's taken sometimes with a lot of manual looks over the data. Estimating population parameters, then, is a lot of our problem here right now. And as Wade said, and what I'm going to lay out in a slightly different way, is the problem is confounding. And the confounding really arises because we have data coming into our system. And even though we have all of the data there in some form that you'd think we'd be able to estimate our differences for heterosis and for breed, we don't have that data in a way that it can be estimated in the same contemporary group often. And really, that contemporary group is the problem. If we're turning one set of breed male sires out onto the heavy milking females, that's a different contemporary group, really. We know something about what we're doing. And if we're treating our heifers differently, and our heifers are one breed and another, then we're treating them differently. It's all contemporary comparison, and this is where the research data is needed. In order to do this, first sentence just a little garbled there. I apologize for that. But in order to do this, we need to basically have purebreds of all the breeds that are involved in our system at the same time within a real contemporary comparison where the animals are treated fairly randomly among who the cows they're mated to, or at least we're able to adjust for those cows using standard relationship methods. Rarely does this really occur. Not only do we have these things where we try to treat the animals differently when we look at the field data, the breeds just are often in totally different groups and locations with a lot of the seed stock data that we have right now. And they're just not necessarily, except in some rare instances, being run together. And then if we think about it, even when they are, we've talked about for most of this multi-breed data set, we generally don't have the pairs of breeds that are most likely called clients of this multi-breed evaluation together. We have comparisons that are being made indirectly, mostly through an outside breed, which is Angus. And that makes another step away from trying to pull these breed differences together. Heterosis is the same problem. We need to have the crossbreds then in the same pastures as and contemporary groups as the purebreds, and we really should have both purebreds and both parental breeds at the same time if we're going to make all the contrast correctly to get the maternal, the maternal, and the heterosis effects out of that cross. So this is just an example then. If I just chose Limousine as an example with Limflex, and basically this is a contemporary group that maybe we do happen to have in the field data, but we have three sires, and let's just pretend they're all mated to purebred Limousine cows that are somewhat the same merit of each other. What is the cause of the differences between these three groups? Can anybody tell me? I put three options down there. Which one is it? I don't know, right? Yes, all of them, or no, none of them. You know, we don't have any idea. And that's really what the confusion, the confounding is that's going on in this whole system. This problem can be improved with more sires in the group, but there still are other considerations that are difficult to address, such as reciprocal matings on crossbred, so that we don't just have sires on one breed and with dams on another. We need dams we need to flip that around and have sires of breed two on dams of breed one. We have biased sampling of sires from whatever breeds we're trying to use to tie things together often, and our knowledge of what those sires are is often fairly limited. Heterosis is still difficult to separate from breed, and then were the calves really treated the same, even if our purebred seed stock producers are running them, saying they're running them in the same contemporary group, are they really always treated the same? This is basically then what we have to get about, and if we were trying to estimate from field data, this would be the model we're trying to use, where basically we have components. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but for the fixed effects that are standard, the basic let's see, the basic breed effects here. That's what this is with the genetic groups type of model. These are the breed effects. This is the standard breeding values we get in our EPDs overall, dominance effects, heterosis types effects, and so forth. So basically, with the multi-breed model, and what we're talking about here is we are required because of the field data structure to, like Wade said, to estimate heterosis and breed effects using estimates from outside programs. And we think, biased, of course, that the GP data from the U.S. Meat Research Center is one of the best places that we can get that from. So this is what I'm really talking about right now if I talk about the current structure of the germplasm evaluation program at the moment. Basically, what we're trying to do right now is be able to have females from all of the, this is the currently the top 18 breeds in the United States in terms of seed stock production that have genetic evaluations, cross to samples, current samples, where we're taking samples of bulls every 2 to 4 years, depending on the breed, and crossing to all these purebred or nearly purebred females. And what this does is create the most giant diallel type of cross that you've ever seen in anything. And if you do the math, which I know the graduate students already have, I think there's 172 different boxes that need to be filled here in order to get the full diallel, and that won't happen right away. Okay, but we have purebreds in here, and we're able to make comparisons that we could start estimating things like specific heterosis or combinability of all these breeds with one another. And basically cross those together, we get F1s and F1 cows, and we get purebred cows out of these matings. We look at the progeny of those as dams as well, so that we do the same thing for maternal heterosis and maternal breed effects. And really that's what we're trying to do with our overall system right now, which is a little bit of an extension from what was previously done with old cycle types of GPE. Okay, that's what the data we're looking at. I won't say everything's complete because we've been in a grading up process to get those females for the past 10 years almost, 8 years anyway, Mark, 8 years. And we're getting really close on quite a bit of this, but we've still got quite a ways to go as well. That said, we're producing useful data for things like parameterization of breed differences that we release every year as part of the Across Breed EPD program, and that have been used for several graduate student projects for some of the novel traits to try to get at current breed differences and current overall heterosis, with maybe a little bit of looks at specific heterosis, and I'll get into that later. This is the other key factor, and this is what we need to think about going forward and where we need some discussion if we're going to start using this data in the multi-breed program to how to make sure that we can connect the dots overall. I've presented this sort of thing a few times, and I know I've presented it so many times that I could quiz a lot of the audience on this, and they could tell me exactly how this works, I'm sure, to get the cross-breed EPD adjustment factors that we do every year. The thing I want you to take home from this is where we're getting breed differences from right now using U.S. mark data. And what happens is we get a breed solution from our U.S. mark GP data overall out of an analysis of approximately 40-some thousand animal pedigree, which is pretty big for our research herd. Using all of the cycles and all of the current data that we have from continuous sampling of GPU that I mentioned just previously, to get a breed solution from a standard model like I showed you just a little few slides ago. And then we adjust using a regression coefficient that's somewhere near 1 generally to put our U.S. mark breed solution on the scale of what we think the genetic evaluation data is. That's using this regression coefficient here. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but it tries to get our data on an industry scale. This is the type of discussion I don't think we want to have here, but this is the type of thing we can talk about with GBE interactions maybe someday down the road. And then basically we look at what the breed average is right now relative to what the average of the animals are that we sampled for GP program overall, and we adjust that breed solution by these EPDs in order to get an idea of what the current breed difference is. Okay, does that make sense? So where that becomes very important, since we're using all those old cycles and this program started in the 1970s, is we've got EPDs from bulls that really weren't in the, haven't been in the system for 40, 50 years in some cases. And we've got bulls that were sampled in some of those early cycles that were founders in the United States anyway, coming in from Canada, of several of these breeds, these continental breeds that are now part of the multi-breed program, okay? Base EPDs, and we need to adjust their influence kind of out of the model toward what the current breed average is, okay? So if we believe EPDs and we believe that the genetic trend is following the progress of those EPDs and selection over time, I think that's fine and a good assumption, okay? This is what we get out of that, and we're able to see, and this is a place, something I do every year, to say, hey, this makes some sense given the genetic trends of several of the breeds right now. This was the difference historically, most likely. This is what the genetic trends and the current breed differences would show that we're at right now on some of these traits, okay? So I think it's pretty clear what's going on in terms of selection over time. So the proposal then we're talking about today is to use breed differences from the GP to parameterize the multi-breed model currently in use by ASA and IGS basically, and provide both breed effects and heterosis. We can basically pre-adjust the data for the breed composition, and we need to consider where the programs are different and how to accommodate the difference. And this is what I want to show as problems. I don't think this is an exhaustive list of problems in this process right now, but what we need to think about going forward, and some of the solutions I've thought about as I made these slides that maybe get around some of these problems, but this is where we need your input, and it doesn't even have to be today. We want people thinking about this and start giving us input for what we think we can do. Potential problems. Currently, the priors for the model, the multi-breed model, are actually not on a breed basis per se, but they're on a breed-by-year basis. And that's a function of the Cornell program that was done at the time. The breeds are entered in as a sort of Westall-type genetic group, but there's a bit of a random element to it rather than a fixed element where the breed effects are correlated, auto-correlated across years. I think I'm saying that correctly. And so what we're producing is something that comes out of the evaluation. We adjust for the trend, as I said, based on what the current EPD is and what our average EPD of the bulls that were used are. And so we have a little bit of a circular problem here in that we're using the data that comes out of the evaluation to adjust our breed differences that we're getting in GPE, and then we're trying to take that and use that to adjust the genetic evaluation. And so one could keep affecting the other, and we're not sure we're going to converge on exactly the right spot. Okay, so we do need to think about something we need to do there. Only Hereford and Angus have been sampled throughout that we could get something that actually kind of resembles a breed difference over time. But even then, we have to consider that we're decreasing our sample size over time if we start to break this out into the years of GPE. So there's a little bit of a problem here in trying to make sure that we fit the year arguments that are currently being used in the multi-breed evaluation. Okay. New trait development. I think we're on a good road with this. I'll cover this later, but currently we summarize the whole GWP database for weight traits and carcass traits. Matt mentioned this in the last talk. Carcass weights were just added this year. We're still missing calving ease. We're still missing stability. We're still missing heifer pregnancy. And who knows what we're going to come up with as we start to get going in seed intake, source of EPDs, and things like that. And some of these are going to require some sort of scaling that's not a standard additive adjustment or pre-adjustment for the breed that we'll have to apply to the multi-breed model. I think most of those are threshold types of traits, and it's not going to be a straightforward plus and minus to incorporate. Heterosis is another thing that we just need to think about here. While it is reported as part of GPE, prior to us doing this new program where we're where we're trying to sample the breeds on a continuous basis, all of the heterosis estimates were basically based on those Hereford and Angus base cows that we had. And so we had a purebred Angus being produced in some cycles with a purebred Hereford and the reciprocal crosses of both breeds. So we don't have as much data outside of that heterosis. We're really starting to bring that in to the point where it's really probably overwhelming, that old Hereford and Angus data. But we don't have as much in terms of specificity for certain breeds. Mark and I have had discussions, and I think several other folks actually have thought about things this way. We can probably start doing good jobs separate from a talk that Matt gave yesterday on one of his graduate students if we start to think about this as the basic Simmental effect of crossing with any other breed overall, which we'd call a general combining ability rather than heterosis. This is the effect of Simmental crossing with every other breed simultaneously. This is the effect of Hereford crossing with every other breed simultaneously, Charolais, Gelvie, Red Angus, so forth. And I think we'd probably do a pretty good job of estimating that from the data that we have right now. But we do have some things underway, and I'll just discuss a little bit, and Matt discussed yesterday some from his graduate student on trying to estimate breed-specific types of heterosis from this data. Possible solutions, as I said, we need to examine what we can do to fill in the years. It may be as simple as assuming some trend things and trying to do some interpolations where we do have old and new estimates. We currently the method that's being used in the multi-breed model places a high correlation among yearly estimates anyway. I think we can probably get a good idea and reference our old solutions in GP with newer solutions and interpolate. But as I said, that would exclude some of this genetic trend that I said is part of our component really right now to get our breed differences on a current basis, and we have to avoid the circular logic problem with the evaluation parameterizing our model, which goes back and parameterizes the evaluation again. New trait development, I think, as I said, we're underway on this pretty well. We've got a prototype for Cavanese Direct and Cavanese Maternal from Cashley, the grad student in the audience here right now, actually, that she worked on that in Lincoln with Matt Spangler. And I think we've got a good start on that. There's some challenges to how much our data shows because we kind of stuck to heifer calving difficulty. We don't have a lot of difficulty with cows. And that does decrease power a little bit, but I think we've got a really good start on that right now. I think similar methodology can start being applied to things like heifer pregnancy and stayability, realizing that we've just started to get to areas where some of those breeds are being represented in high numbers with longevity data on those cows in order to parameterize the stayability or survival analysis model. Okay. Breed-specific heterosis, I mentioned this combining ability potential as I discussed that in looking at that, and that's not even on this slide, but Matt talked about yesterday another of his graduate students where we've published a paper talking about breed type-specific heterosis, which is basically British by British, British by continental, or continental by continental in that paper, and whether we kind of see evidence of differences among those three biological types. We've talked about doing that and then having random effects for the breed-specific heterosis nested within those breed type-specific heterosis and keep it random, and it won't really deviate from that breed type-specific heterosis until there's enough information to say it's important. Future plan. So I think one of the big things here is trying to address these complications, and one of the most important things about it is to continue trait development and examination of breed effect model implications at the Mino Research Center and potentially in terms of the multi-breed evaluation overall. We need to continue collaborations. One of those I put up here because I think we've had a real success with UNL so far, as you've probably seen, but we've had other good projects going on, K-State, for instance, right now, looking at breed differences for some other novel traits. I want to emphasize and I want to appeal a little bit. We talk about funding and things like this. We need to think about how we can use some small amounts of funding to try to make the multi-breed better with cooperations from breed associations and training for graduate student development. So in the back of our mind, we need to think about what is the importance of getting this done right and how can we help that be done with graduate students. And I think that solves a whole lot of the problems that we've been talking about here today overall. This ties in well with the direction of the Crossbreed EPD program anyway, and us trying to do things where we become more web-based rather than paper-based overall, so that the whole program is more accessible to the industry in general. If we try to put it into a large model that's already being parameterized, then we've taken care of a good chunk of the breeds and need to just focus on making sure that we have a way to compare the EPDs of the remaining breed associations in an equitable way. I think efficient updating of the crossbreed EPD system and faster reporting of novel trait results will come out of this, but we need to keep on that and keep that as a real priority so that we do this. And then this AFRI grant that Matt mentioned on decision support really ties right into this sort of thing. So I hope from all of this and from all of these presentations you see a general continuity of what we want to do to tackle some problems that we're seeing right now in a way that probably will help outreach to the commercial producers overall once we get this done, so that seed stock's really benefiting a whole group of people and tying in a lot of the support that we already have. We think that the GP program and the multi-breed model are a natural fit. I know we've been harping on the U.S. Meal Research Center as a source of the data. We'd still love to have other sources of data to help parameterize this, but I don't see a high breed comparison program at a research institution or otherwise going on in the United States right now that would help. Obviously, one of the primary places being in the South, where we have the biggest potential for heat tolerance and G by E interactions. This will improve the base adjustment among current members of IGS, I think, quite a bit right now, and get us on an equitable scale so that it matches the crossbreed EPD program, and hopefully this helps us transition to mating and decision support programs. So please let us know if you're interested in any of these development opportunities. We're looking for good collaborations with both the seed stock producers and the universities to make all of this happen, and we'll eventually transition this into genomic types of applications I fully envision as we go forward. So with that, Wade and I have been sort of backroom talking about this for years, and then we never get together well enough, so I want to give a lot of credit to Bruce Golden for making sure that we get this started here a few weeks ago, and Bruce has done an amazing amount of work to try to get a lot of these things thought out anyway, so Bruce couldn't be here today, or he'd be giving this talk, and we'd be glad to let him, but he couldn't be here now. I want to really appreciate what he's done. My fellow GP colleagues that were on the call discussing some of this, Warren Snelling and Mark Tallman. Matt also helped us with a lot of the planning of this on that call, and Lauren was on with Wade on the other end in addition to us. So with that, we'll talk about questions and any discussion that we can have right now. So.